So today we are reading from Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And today we'll be covering verses 70 to 73. 73 has been written very artistically on the board. And we can imagine what this little cottage is. Maybe it's where they're hoping to put me after the class. If it doesn't go well. So I'll read the translations for 70, 71 and 72, and we can chant 73 together. I think it's 73 on the board, yeah. Text 70. From which sampradaya has he accepted the sannyas order, and what is his name? Of course, this is a conversation with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is up until this point not particularly well acquainted with Lord Chaitanya. It's not necessarily his devotional prowess, but he has just recently met him, and Mukunda Datta and Gopinath Acharya are introducing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to the Lord. And so he's making various inquiries as to the Lord, his background, his history, etc. So here he's questioning Mukunda Datta. From which sampradaya has he, Lord Chaitanya, accepted the sannyas order, and what is his name? 71. Gopinath Acharya replied, the Lord's name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and his sannyas preceptor is the greatly fortunate Keshav Bharati. 72. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Sri Krishna is a very good name, but he belongs to the Bharati community, therefore he is a second-class sannyasi. Text 73, today's verse. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Gopinath Acharya replied, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There is no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas from the Bharati Sampradaya community, which belongs to the disciplic succession of Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya introduced names for his sannyas disciples, and these are 10 in number. Out of these, the surnames Tirtha, Ashram and Saraswati are considered topmost. In the monastery at Sringeri, the surname Saraswati is considered first class, Bharati second class, and Puri third class. A sannyasi who has very nicely understood the slogan Tat Dvam Asi and who takes his bath at the confluence of the rivers Ganges, Yamuna and Saraswati is called Tirtha. A person who is very eager to accept sannyas, who is detached from worldly activities, who has no desire for any kind of material facilities and who is thus saved from repeated birth and death is known as Ashram. When a sannyasi lives in a beautiful solitary place in the forest and is freed from all material desires, he is called Vana. A sannyasi who always lives in the forest and renounces all connection with the world in order to be elevated to the heavenly planets where he can live in the Nandana Kanana is called Aranya. One who prefers living in the mountains, engaging in the study of the Bhagavad Gita, and whose intelligence is fixed is called Giri. One who prefers living in great mountains, even among ferocious animals, to attain the summit of philosophical speculation, understanding that the essence of this material world is useless, is called Parvat. A sannyasi who has dipped into the ocean of the absolute truth and collected some valuable stones of knowledge from that ocean, who never falls from the regulative principles of a sannyasi, is called Sagar. One who has learned the classical art of music, who engages in its culture, and who has become expert and completely aloof from material attachment is called Saraswati. Saraswati is the goddess of music and learning, and in one hand she holds a musical instrument called a veena. A sannyasi who is always engaged in music for spiritual elevation is called Saraswati. One who has become completely educated and is freed from all kinds of ignorance, and who is never unhappy, even in a distressed condition, is called Bharati. One who has become very expert in absolute knowledge, who is situated in the absolute truth, and who always discusses the absolute truth, is called Puri. All these sannyasis are assisted by brahmacharis, who are described as follows. One who knows his real identity and is fixed in his particular occupational duty, who is always happy in spiritual understanding, is called Swarup Brahmachari. One who completely knows the Brahman effulgence and is always engaged in the practice of yoga is called Prakash Brahmachari. One who has acquired absolute knowledge and who always meditates on the absolute truth, knowledge, the ultimate, and the Brahman effulgence, thus keeping himself in transcendental bliss, is called Ananda Brahmachari. Do we have any of those here? Ananda Brahmacharis? One who is able to distinguish between matter and spirit, who is never disturbed by material transformations, and who meditates on the unlimited, inexhaustible, auspicious Brahman effulgence, is a first-class learned brahmachari and is named Chaitanya. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was talking with Gopinath Acharya about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas community, he appreciated the first name Sri Krishna, but he did not like the surname Chaitanya, which is the name for a brahmachari belonging to the Bharati community. He therefore suggested that the Lord be elevated to the Saraswati community. However, Gopinath Acharya pointed out that the Lord does not depend on any external formality. Gopinath Acharya was firmly convinced that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself and was therefore independent of any external ritual or formality. If one wants to engage in pure devotional service, he does not require titular superiority as a Bharati or a Saraswati. Srila Prabhupada ki. Well, there's a rather detailed explanation of the intricacies of naming conventions for sannyasis and brahmacharis. Om Jnanati Minandasya Jnananjana Shalakam Asmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Plenty of details, and largely this is a description of the Shankara Sampradaya, the Shankara system, which has its headquarters in a place which is mentioned here, Sringeri. So Shankaracharya established headquarters in four corners of India. And the headquarter in South India is the Sringeri Mart, which is described as a large monastery where you can imagine that lots of sannyasis are there and lots of brahmacharis and all sorts of spiritual things going on. And it is from this sampradaya that Lord Chaitanya took initiation, or not initiation, took sannyas. Kesha Bharati was a member of this sampradaya. And it's very interesting to see the interesting hierarchies that are present. First class sannyas order, the second class, the third class, and also the many different descriptions and names given to people who adopt a particular type of lifestyle. So these are distinctions which are not normally considered in our particular line. These are the Shankara divisions, the Shankara system. The sannyas order itself is an interesting order in that it is transcendental to society. That is the definition of a sannyasi, transcendental to society, but somehow still regulated within the institution of Varnashram. Of course, not quite regulated in the same way that others need to be regulated. A sannyasi is actually the head of the institution in one sense and regulates the others through advice and guidance. But still within the system. Sometimes people say sannyas means you leave a system of organization of anything. Not entirely. Yes, when one takes sannyas, one formally gives up connections to society and no longer acts in a way that increases the person's role in society or gives the person any standing in society. One accepts the sacrificial fire among in themselves. That is the a symbolic representation that everyone else, except sannyasis, Hare Krishna, is meant to be conducting sacrifice. Sannyasi is given the exemption from sacrifice because he has transcended that. And that's why it is said the sannyasi accepts the sacrificial fire within themselves. Not literally. That should be understood. Not literally. They're not doing any of these magic tricks where the person swallows fire and breathes it out. Nothing like that. It is a meaning that the person has transcended the need because by cultivating the fire of their spiritual practice within themselves, they no longer need to externally perform sacrifice, fire sacrifice. And so it's interesting that Prabhupada goes into such detail about these sannyas distinctions. But it's interesting because it is, of course, a big mystery for some, and also an interesting discussion as to why Lord Chaitanya took initiation from the Shankara Sampradaya, which is considered Mayavad, which is basically Mayavad philosophy. Well, the thing is, Lord Chaitanya had a very special, specific reason for taking sannyas. And his reason was that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was being misunderstood by people. Now, this is not the typical ego trip of a person in this material world who wants a name, fame, and position that accurately communicates their fine competence and character in this world. Hope you can detect the irony. It is not of the same caliber. Here is a person who is actually the Supreme Lord. There is no one superior to him. All the demigods, they are bewildered by him. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti atsuraya. Even the great sages, the great demigods, the great rishis, the topmost persons in society are all bewildered by the Supreme Lord. So he is unquestionably the Supreme Lord. And if people in society are going to derive benefit, they need to know that. Or at least if they don't know those details, they at least need to offer respect to that. So there was this episode this past time where Lord Chaitanya was chanting the names of Gopi, Gopi and others. And he was in a mood of meditating on Srimati Radharani and the Gopis and their exalted devotion. And then there are many other occasions as well where common people could not understand Lord Chaitanya's mood. And they were thinking he's become some kind of sahajiya. And so they were mocking him and deriding him and, you know, the usual things that uncultured people do. So Lord Chaitanya thought, okay, these people are not taking me seriously. And as I repeat, this is not the mood of an egotistical person who wants to create some big position for themselves just in order to increase their name, fame and distinction. This is Lord Chaitanya wanting people in general to respect him so that they could derive ultimate benefit and free themselves from the cycle of birth and death. That's Lord Chaitanya's thinking. That is typically not the thinking in the modern world. In the modern world, a person wants to be a big leader, wants reputation, so they feel good, so that they can live a life of name, fame, and distinction. But Lord Chaitanya is so special that he manifests not always as the Supreme Lord. You know, a big egotistical person presents themselves with all their paraphernalia and demands respect always. But the Lord is so careful, he is so subtle and so detached from name, fame, distinction, that he appears in the most, in the most inconceivable and hidden ways. First of all, he pervades this entire universe through his Brahman effulgence. Every single place. In fact, this whole world is floating in the Lord's effulgence. Then he appears as the super soul within the core of every person's heart. And not just every human, not just every devotee, not just every person who is considered a fine, upstanding character, but he appears in in the heart of the worm in the stool, the bacteria, the virus. He appears in the most unglamorous places. He's not constantly demanding name, fame, and distinction. So when he does make an attempt to actually become recognized, there is something very substantial going on. And so Lord Chaitanya wanted to take sannyas so that people at least there was a strong degree of culture in those areas, those regions at the time. And people would naturally offer obeisances to a sannyasi, regardless of the philosophical understanding, the particular direction of his study, learning, siddhanta. They would naturally just offer obeisances. And this is interesting because Prabhupada would say that his father, there were many sannyasis who came, who were entertained or met by his father, and he would naturally be trained to offer them respect. And that's an interesting element of culture. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to capitalize on this. And at that time, the Shankara Sampradaya was really the prominent Sampradaya within which there were the most powerful sannyasis. So it was the standard institution of the world. Different religious organizations have different institutions. You have the Church of England, you have the Vatican. You have different institutions which are recognized as the holders of, how can you say, some sort of status or some sort of right to be the authorities. Every place has this. And there are different places as well in the world, according to the faith, which have different prominences, which are centers of importance. St. Paul's Cathedral, Mecca, so many places, right? Where there are focal points which are the standard for members of that faith to turn to as the authority. And of course, being Kali Yuga, for every authorized head of an institution, there are numerous others competing for the same title. And then numerous breakaway factions and numerous different fragments. And so this Shankara system was the same. He established four mats in different corners of India, north, west, south, east. And now, of course, there are many, many branches from those. As Prabhupada explains in one place, that not all of them are entirely aligned together philosophically, but they are still somehow connected, still connected to the idea that Shankara is the preceptor and that his system lasts. So the Shankara Sampradaya had the prominent sannyasis, and we heard about the different types and the categories. In the Vaishnava Sampradaya, at that time, the sannyas order was not particularly well represented. But Prabhupada says it is a misnomer by some unscrupulous people that they say that there were no sannyasis amongst Vaishnavas until this point. So Prabhupada says that is not the case. In the line of Vishnu Swami, there were many sannyasis. It is just that things go through different cycles of prominence and decay, prominence and decay. And so at this point, the Shankara sannyasis are prominent. Given that Mahaprabhu's mission was to be connected to people, he chose the mechanism that would bring him the best option. And so he took initiation from Kesha Bharati. Now that is a whole different story as well, because although externally Kesha Bharati is a Mayavad sannyasi in that sense, in one sense, according to higher understandings, he also has a more esoteric sort of connection. There is some authoritative sources state that he was actually initiated by Madhavendra Puri at one point. Very interesting. But Prabhupada presents these different viewpoints without giving necessarily a definitive conclusion. In the Gaur Granadesh Dipika, it is also mentioned that this person, Kesha Bharati, is actually none other than Sandipani Muni, who conducted the ceremonies for Krishna, taught him, etc. So very interesting how if we think in a deeper sense, whatever the external manifestation is in this world, the Lord's eternal associates remain eternal associates, and they have performed many other pastimes with the Lord. And so the idea that the Lord takes sannyas from this order is something which glorifies that order. As one of the verses we read said, the Lord's name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and his sannyas preceptor is the greatly fortunate Kesha Bharati. It is the appearance of Lord Chaitanya in his line that is causing his preceptor Kesha Bharati to be now termed greatly fortunate. So when there is some great glorious production in a particular place, a great person is born in a lineage, that entire lineage becomes glorified. By Prahlad Maharaj being born in that lineage of Asuras, that whole line is famous now throughout the whole world. Very, very interesting. Bali Maharaj and others, they are Asuras. But somehow, there's something special about that line. Because Prahlad Maharaj appeared, Bali Maharaj appeared. Therefore, it is glorious. So, wherever Lord Chaitanya appears, that place becomes glorious. And so he decided to take sannyas from this sampradaya. And the convention is that, as we heard about the sannyasis and the brahmacharis, the convention is that when one approaches one of these order, one of these institutions, one of these mats, one first of all serves the senior sannyasis as a brahmachari. One is trained by one of the sannyasis. So it's described that Lord Chaitanya approached Kesha Bharati, and at that point he took on this title, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So Chaitanya is, as we read, is the name of a brahmachari who serves a sannyasi. So there's an interesting discussion as to why Lord Chaitanya did not take the name Bharati after taking sannyas. Now, in this particular Shankara system, one retains that name Chaitanya. It is like a title almost, a description which everyone takes on board. And then when one formally takes sannyas, one adopts one of those other names. And we read those. They are Tirtha. Saraswati, Bharati, and Puri. Those are the three names. Saraswati, it is said, is first class, Bharati second class, and Puri third class. So under normal circumstances, Lord Chaitanya should have taken the name Bharati. But he didn't. And there's an explanation by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as to why he didn't do that. Because typically, in the Mayavadi system, when one takes sannyas, there is an understanding that that person has become one with the Supreme. So that is the sort of the elevated aspiration. That's the aspiration that their members are looking for, that we become one with the Supreme. And therefore, when one receives a title like that, Saraswati, Bharati, one is deemed to have achieved some status of perfection. But Mahaprabhu did not want to be associated with that type of perfection, because that's immediately what people would think of. Bharati, oh, here is a Mayavad sannyasi who has become one with the Supreme Lord. So Mahaprabhu did not want that. So he preferred to keep this name Chaitanya, which is effectively the name of a brahmachari. And he wanted to remain in that mood as a servant. That is, of course, Lord Chaitanya's mood as a servant. But Chaitanya itself was also interesting, because right at the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrit, Prabhupada gives a wonderful introduction to the meaning of Chaitanya Charitamrit. And an explanation for the word Chaitanya is given there, which means the living force. Living force. And so Lord Chaitanya is the living force for the devotees. So it's a name which the devotees like very much. Even though someone like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya looks at this name and says, Chaitanya, that's not a very good name. If you remember, he was happy with the name Krishna. But he heard the name Chaitanya and said, this is not so good. He says, He belongs to the Bharati community and therefore he's a second class sannyasi. So in all orders of life, there are some hierarchies. There are persons considered more elevated, even less elevated. That's life. There are some who would like to remove all hierarchies. Sometimes the liberal agenda goes so far that they would like to make everyone equal. And this is common, it's a thread throughout the entire world. There are many regimes which are founded on this principle of everyone becoming equal. Or as we read in the famous book, George Orwell and Animal Farm, all men are equal, but some are more equal than others. Every so often someone propounds a philosophy that everyone is equal. But the fact is that everyone is supposed to be equal. But amongst that, some group of privileged persons are always more equal than others. That's the hilarity of it. Now the fact is that hierarchy is natural. No two people are the same. So the idea of imposing artificially an idea that everyone is the same is, well, according to Prabhupada's opinion, it's foolishness. It's attempting to impose a completely unnatural situation upon an underlying reality. The underlying reality is that there are some people who are more intelligent than others, some people who are stronger than others, some people who are more renounced than others, some people who are better looking than others, some who are more powerful, some who are more opulent. All these distinctions exist inherently due to one's karma, due to one's own activities, due to the particular role one needs in this life in order to fulfill their desires. Or if you imagine all our complicated, entangled desires from so many lifetimes, they're all sitting there, just waiting to be processed, waiting to be fulfilled one by one. And so each life is an opportunity whereby a subset of those desires gets fulfilled according to the Lord's arrangement. We may have a desire for opulence. So in this life, some people get it. Some people don't. Some people are struggling throughout their entire life for a few pennies. Others have more money than they know what to do with. It's just natural. Some people are strong, some people are weak, some people are intelligent, some people are not. It's natural. So hierarchies are there. And in this particular strongly regimented and strongly, how can you say, delineated organization, you can see there are 10 different categories, three different standards, topmost, medium, less, and then third class. And they have different characteristics and different behaviors. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. Jai. They each have different behaviors. Now, traditionally, there is nothing wrong, because if a person in a lower status looks up to a person in a higher status, that is extremely beneficial for that person, because they derive benefit. Krishna sees that they follow the order, and if they aspire to achieve something, they showed respect to that, which is completely the opposite to the way things work today. Today, if someone is higher than you, in some system, and someone is always higher than someone, than everyone. Even the topmost person in the world, unless you happen to have a massive ego, can appreciate that there is someone more advanced in some capacity than them. And the typical way that most people in this world deal with it is that they try to bring down their superiors. They try to regulate that there is no superiority. They try to regulate it out of existence, even though it's clear. The result of that is that when the junior displays such resentment towards a senior's position, the junior makes no advancement. And they never achieve the very things in this life that they are envious of, that other people have. Rather, they simply go lower and lower and lower. It's a basic material principle which also has very strong spiritual application. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadikshantite jnanam jnaninastatva darshana. That one should approach a bona fide spiritual master. One should surrender to them. Pranipat. One should question pariprashnena. One should serve sevaya. all of these things, all starting from the principle of surrender. So in the past, all material education was done like this also, because that's natural. But one surrenders to a more learned person if they wish to advance in learning. And we read in the Mahabharata so many great rishis and saints who imparted all these different weapons to Arjuna and the Pandavas. It's a wonderful adventure in the Mahabharata. Arjuna, through his behavior, he pleases all these great persons who are very, very powerful. And he achieves their blessings. He achieves different shaktis. Arjuna received different arrows, different weapons, which were all used in the battle of Kurukshetra. So that is the typical order for hierarchy. And it's a natural system, and it's there. Chaturvaranyam maya srishtam. This whole thing is Krishna Srishti, Krishna's creation, not a concoction. Rather, the opposite is our concoction. But there is always a more elevated spiritual purpose. Atha pumbir dvijashreshta varnashrama vibhagasa swanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. That all these divisions, orders, statuses, positions, occupations in society, they all have one purpose, to please the Supreme Lord. Samsiddhir haritoshanam. That is the goal of everything. All the divisions in society, all the orders, all the varanas and all the ashrams, they're all there to please the Supreme Lord. Why? Because ultimately, as spiritual beings, we're not any of these external identities. And that is something that we need to remember. If we don't remember it, sometimes problems can occur. Now, typically, if you look at the hierarchy system that I described, there will be in this hierarchy someone who is considered in a high status of life. Maybe he has Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shri, whatever it is. The things that Queen Kunti requests are not so important. States are not so important. But if a person is in a high status, the consequence is that they can, and often do, become very proud. That's not a big mystery. That's we observe it, don't we? When a person has a high status, they become proud. And at some point, they forgot that they should obtain their status through commanding respect, and rather they use their status to now demand respect from others. That's very dangerous. And there are persons in the Bhagavatam who have fallen foul of this. Daksha is the most prominent example. That Daksha was a very, very elevated, very very strong, very advanced individual who was one of the designated Prajapatis for this world. But he was so caught up in that sense of superiority and power and advancement that he was exceptionally offended when a person far superior to him, which he couldn't detect, Lord Shiva, did not offer him obeisances, as everyone else was doing. In that assembly where Daksha was conducting a sacrifice, Lord Brahma did not offer obeisances, and neither did Lord Shiva. Well, it's said that Lord Brahma offered respects, but later on Lord Brahma doesn't, because he's his son in one sense. But Lord Shiva also didn't. But Daksha couldn't accept that. He said, "Who is this Lord Shiva? He hangs around with ghosts and goblins," and he gave some very colourful descriptions of Lord Shiva in public. This was taken with great distaste by Lord Shiva's followers. And so there was this great barrage of words and curses then between the followers of Daksha and the followers of Lord Shiva, and it became such a mess that Lord Shiva simply got up and left. He had enough of the whole thing. Daksha was seriously at fault here. And don't forget, Daksha is a very highly qualified, highly capable individual. His disqualification was apparent. And eventually, as things transpired, he continued to make further offenses. He continued to offend his own daughter, who had married Lord Shiva. And the consequence of that was eventually Lord Shiva had enough and he finished Daksha off. He created this demon Birabhadra, and that was the end of Daksha. Daksha as he was. He was then reincarnated with the head of a goat and a few other features, but that's not exactly his desired outcome. So we have to be careful that when one offends a very, very powerful personality, there may be reactions. And the power of that personality is not determined by the external position they occupy. That is something that is a trick or a truth that we need to grasp. The four Kumaras cursed Jay and Vijay, who thought these are just small boys who are trying to come to see the Lord. Who do they think they are? Don't they know you cannot just walk up to the gates and see Lord Vishnu? The fact is, these are the four Kumaras. These are exceptionally transcendental, the first created beings practically in the whole cosmic sense. And Lord Vishnu is their dear superior, and they wanted to see him. And Jay and Vijay were of a different character. Stop them. So they made a mistake there, that they looked at the external status and they completely failed to see the person's actual position. And they ended up in a big mess. So Daksha, Jay and Vijay, two examples. Now, in terms of fundamental reality, this is why we have to remember that we are ultimately none of these designations. Because if we forget that we are not these designations, we can become proud. If we actually understand we do have no designations, we won't become proud. And a saintly person, if they're ever in a position, or if they're ever in a situation where they now achieve a high position, and one example I'm thinking of is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, after he was manifested, and after, you know, he heard the instruction to perform tapa, just while he was navigating this whole stem of the lotus. And then he performed that tapasya, that austerity. After he finally has darshan of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord gives him instructions and empowerment to create, Lord Brahma's request to the Lord is, you are now going to engage me in this powerful task of creation. It is a very great task, and there is every danger that I may become puffed up and proud. So please give me the strength to not allow the performance of this great role to go to my head effectively. That is the meditation of an advanced person, of a person who is genuinely advanced, that they're praying that they will not forget their actual position. The actual position as one who does not have these designations of status. Every morning, if you engage in deity worship, you will recite one verse which is very important. Naham miprana cha narapatira na pivaishana shudra naham maranina cha grihapatira namanastoya tirva intu prodhyan nikila paramananda purnam ratabdir gopi bhartu vadakamala yor das das anudasaha naham viprana cha narapatira na pivaishana shudra. Hopefully that's clear. I'm not a brahmana. Naham viprana. I'm not any of these things. Neither a brahmana, a shudra, a sannyasi, whatever it is. You know, all of these four members of the ashrams and four varanas, I'm not any of these things. But Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Das Das Anudasaha, I'm a servant of the gopis in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Das 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 Anudasaha. That is the spiritual truth and the spiritual reality that has to underlie any society or any notion of hierarchy. Ideally, each person has to imbibe that. But each person typically won't like the sound of that. Because typically most people are functioning on the platform of ego. They're not functioning on this platform, and nor do they have much attraction for it. So therefore, in society, to cater for such people, they need to see, here's hierarchy. Here is authority. Here is law and order. Here is a member of the police. Here's a policeman. You don't mess with a policeman. That is something, a simple truth that everyone in society needs to know. But ultimately, on a higher principle, an advanced person knows that a policeman is actually just the same as us. He's a human being in society. If you're more spiritually elevated, you understand that this policeman is just a spirit soul also, just like us. Actually, not just a spirit soul. That's a very glorious position, to be a spirit soul. This person is a dear servant of the Lord. I am also a dear servant of the Lord, potentially. I just have to become dear to him through proper conduct, through proper behavior, through proper practice. But yes, so there is that oneness and difference. For those who are not particularly elevated in their consciousness and thinking, they need hierarchy. They need clear distinctions, divisions, because it helps everything run harmoniously. When one is on a transcendental platform, these things are not so significant. They're not that important. Because a person knows that a person who has a particular status has been given that status in order to help them fulfill the role. And it has no bearing to their actual inner status, which is Das, Das, Anudas, which is as spirit soul. And so in Lord Chaitanya's life and his pastimes, the more we look into the details, why he did certain things, why he didn't do certain things, why he took sannyas, why he took sannyas from a Mayavadi, why he adopted a name from the Mayavadi sect at one point, Chaitanya, but then didn't adopt the natural consequence of that, Bharati. Why he did certain things, why he didn't do certain things, gives us a great deal of insight into Mahaprabhu's mood. Ultimately, as it said here, as Gopinath Acharya says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There is no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. He knows, Gopinath Acharya knows, that what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya needs to know is almost the opposite of what Lord Chaitanya did. Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas because it was an external formality that would bring respect. But here Gopinath Acharya is telling him, Lord Chaitanya does not rely on external formality, which is actually the inner truth, that the Lord doesn't care. But he has performed this pastime where seemingly he does the opposite of this principle. He seemingly does the opposite because it helps serve his mission. And his mission is a glorious mission that is well worth anything. Lord Chaitanya has broken open the storehouse of love of Godhead, tasted it, and is distributing it freely. No one else has done that before, and that is a great gift to everyone. So when Lord Chaitanya comes up with a special system for doing it, in this incarnation, in this appearance, he adopts sannyas. That is the Lord's divine expertise, the Lord's divine wisdom, his wonderful leela, his wonderful pastime. So these are all the truths that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is receiving from Gopinath Acharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is in one sense disqualified from having darshan of the Lord, from having connection with the Lord. He's disqualified due to his Mayavad tendencies, due to his perhaps his status, his preoccupation with his being a member of the topmost order. But his redeeming quality is that he has persons like Gopinath Acharya, Mukunda, who else? Others who are devotees of the Lord, who are acting as the via medium between the Supreme Lord, who's completely disinterested in any person who's not a devotee. They're acting as a via medium between Lord Chaitanya and that person. So that is their great fortune. So therefore the devotees of the Lord are very important, very special, and they are ultimately transcendental to any systems. Okay, I'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki. Does anyone have any questions, any comments? One question from Ian.
Hare Krishna. No, thank you so much for your class. Very, I really love your classes. They're quite amazing. there's something you spoke on. I just wanted to get your perspective. Oh, actually, a few questions I had, but I can go through them slowly. You mentioned, the tendency for people to, develop pride because of particular roles and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And earlier on, you were also talking about, the different hierarchies of the different qualities or propensities that different people have, mm-hmm. most probably because of things that they've desired in the past. So from a neophyte stage, what should our mentality be because we normally choose to avoid these things for the fear of getting pride or you know, putting ourselves in that position.
Avoiding position.
Yeah. So so what should be our mentality so that we or how should we trudge on in our devotional life so we can still utilize what we have and not, you know, have that risk and have the proper mentality.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Yes, one should despise being in a position where they have to conduct themselves with diplomacy under all circumstances. Diplomacy is not a friend of a devotee. And it's sad sometimes when diplomacy is touted as a quality one has to possess in order to be taken seriously as a devotee. That is a greatly lamentable situation. Diplomacy is basically duplicity. if you're actually honest about it, it basically is duplicity, where you portray something in a certain manner when your intention is something different. It is a direct sort of counter concept to direct truthful behavior. But the thing is, that's not quite complete, because sometimes that may be necessary in order to serve the absolute truth. However, a devotee has an avoidance of it, has a tendency, has a desire to avoid it. A devotee prefers not to do it. But sometimes one may be put into such a position where one has to now take on a certain type of responsibility. As Prabhupada also says, that one advances to the degree that one takes responsibility for the mission of Prabhupada, which means becoming responsible. It means that taking ownership of our duty to now further this mission. And what that duty means different things for different people. Sometimes it might mean taking a sort of more of an organizational, managerial role in order to fulfill certain things for the mission. But that doesn't mean that those are the only legitimate people taking responsibility. There may be many others who are never heard, never seen, never known by anyone in any position, but who may actually be far more dear to Krishna ultimately because of the way they conduct themselves in their personal life, in their private life, and in the way that they preach. Two important components. So try to separate taking responsibility, which means actually taking ownership of our duty to serve the Lord and to purify our own existence. Try to separate that aspect from adopting a position where one carries out certain activities. Typically, the first thing I've mentioned is often in conflict when the position comes up. Because immediately with a position, all these other things creep in naturally. A person becomes puffed up. A person feels they have a right to enforce their agenda on someone else. They may think that with my expert logic, with my expert reasoning, with my worldly experience, I'm going to tell this person what I think. And if they're against it, I will maneuver the situation in so many different ways to try to make them accept it. That nature of an individual to maneuver a situation or a person is diametrically against the inner desire of an actual devotee. Devotee does not like to do that to anyone. So a devotee sometimes has to become a little resistant and has to build up a little protective wall around themselves. If they actually have complete distaste for this, they have to build up a little wall around themselves in order to protect themselves from being on the receiving end of others who think that's the right way to behave. So you'll see many interesting dynamics going on. However, that dynamic is also not the most advanced dynamic. A person may do that because that's what they think that needs to be done. In order to protect themselves from the manipulative behavior of others, they show complete disrespect for such behavior, wherever and whenever they see it. But that is not the most advanced thing to do. It's one step, potentially, that someone might do. The more advanced step is to be like Prahlad Maharaj, who was on the receiving end of so much nonsense. Receiving end of so much nonsense from Hiranyakashipu, so much bogus education from Chanda and Amarka. But he was always exceptionally peaceful, exceptionally submissive, exceptionally respectful. That's very interesting. Very, very interesting. That he was of such a caliber that he could do that. Now, not everyone is always of that caliber. So, what I would say is, try and take the focus away from avoiding or accepting a particular position that may be offered or demanded, as often is the case, of someone. And rather focus on the other aspect of how much ownership do I want to take for serving the mission. And then whatever you do will be done in the right perspective.
Thank you. No, that's perfect. Then there's something else, just it got sparked as you were reading the purport and you were discussing with how, like, you know, Shankaracharya's system, you know, was broken down in different places, but still all part of Shankaracharya's philosophy or, you know, system. And it just made me think about, and you know, Mahaprabhu, you know, took initiation from there, you know, with a greater goal and greater gain. And it just made me question, I just started reflecting on Prabhupada's first mission or the purpose of ISKCON, which was to systematically propagate spirituality across all spheres. So my question is, how should we also, you know, should our goal also to interact with other spiritual groups in a similar fashion, where we, you know, we kind of can come together to propagate spirituality in that sense, or should we, because there could be some conflict between trying to, you know, spread Krishna conscious philosophy and other religious groups. So how can we understand that as well, or Prabhupada's mentality in that sense as well?
It's interesting. Prabhupada's own dealings give some insight into this. Sometimes he would be confrontational with members of some other groups when they propounded their philosophies. With Christians, Prabhupada was like fire on this one point. Jesus said, "Thou shalt not kill." It's a commandment. Why do you kill? Just stop any other discussions until you answer this point. Prabhupada was, this is it. There's no. Let's discuss the intricacies of the Siddhanta or the intricacies of what's in this parable and try and compare it to something in one of our books and this and that. Jesus said, "Do not kill." Why are you doing it? Just don't come to a platform of trying to find similarities until you can deal with this gross misconduct first. Sometimes he was like fire. Other times, he had interesting conversations with people. Especially with Mayavad style concepts, he was like fire. He didn't care. He was not going to give a person respect just because of their status. He would, you know, openly to his disciples and sometimes in public situations also deride the philosophy that's spoken by some other groups. But that wasn't his standard. Prabhupada didn't do that. And as Prabhupada said also, he had some license because he was an old man. You know, he said, old men and children, they have some license. They can say things directly sometimes. But not that everyone else can do that. And so we have to be a little careful with that. Our mission when preaching is to actually help those who are ready for it. Is to help those who for whom there is some chance that they will make progress. Those are the people we focus our efforts on. Generally, engagements with other groups happens, and it definitely happens here at the Manor in different ways. Certainly before the lockdown, it was a lot more extensive, with members of so many different forums, Heartsmere Forum of Faiths, and so many other groups where we have had many interfaith discussions with different religions. That's very important. That should always go on. Those forums and those systems are not occasions where you try and impose your philosophy or educate others into your philosophy. In fact, whenever someone tries to do that in these forums, it creates an atmosphere of distaste. And sometimes people have done that. I've seen it. It's not particularly relishable. Because we're actually coming together in a sense of cultivating mutual respect. But that's not the same as uplifting one's self spiritually through a process of spiritual practice. That cannot happen with these groups. We have to understand what is our connection with such areas. If we visit the Shankara Math, which we may do, Lord Chaitanya visited it. When Lord Chaitanya went to South India, in Sringeri is in Karnataka, and Lord Chaitanya stopped off there. He visited the place. And so when we go to different places in India, we will also visit many places. I remember visiting one place in Rishikesh, where a great Ganga Puja takes place. But it happens to be a sort of Mayavadi institute. But it's still the prominent one. So you might visit it. But when you visit such a place, you're not there to give your philosophy, and you're definitely not there to receive their philosophy. That's the mood within which we conduct ourselves. But there has to be a decent level of respect, so that when we see a person who does something different to us, we don't think, oh, he's a demon. That shouldn't be what goes through our mind. We should think, here is a conditioned individual. As the Gita says, one adopts a mode of faith according to the mode they're in. Here is a person who's adopted a particular thing, but he's a dear servant of Krishna, ultimately. And let me offer respects to him in that mood. So we don't engage with such groups for preaching purposes. We look for others who are ready for, who want to move forward in their lives. After so many lives, Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Beach, after wandering in this whole world, who is that fortunate person who is now ready to meet a devotee and take off? That's the type of people we focus on. Okay, anyone else? Okay, thank you. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.